Welcome to another episode of Random Trek, the podcast where I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest on this episode is Tony Sindelar. Tony, thank you for joining me.
It's a pleasure to be here, Scott.
How might the people know you?
I occasionally appear as a panelist on The Incomparable, which is, I think, how we have internet met. I don't think we've ever non-internet met.
We have not.
Yeah, good. Sorry, checks out. and I have regularly appeared on the Incomparable spinoff, Total Party Kill, where you were my dungeon master.
And now you are the dungeon
and
master.
And now I am the dungeon master. You were not the dungeon master-y, but that's right. I am a dungeon master for other people.
Yes, so. I'm not even involved. You kicked me off.
You were invited.
I was invited.
But escaped.
I declined.
Which is a podcast where people from the Incomparable and other parts of the internet play D&D and... You get to listen to nerds roll dice and talk about goblins and speak in funny voices. And it's all of that and more.
So. And it's entertaining. And you can also watch the video, right? Because you guys record the video and put it on YouTube. So if you're not content with just listening to people play D&D, but you want to watch people play D&D on the internet.
You can watch a little video conference call of them.
That's right.
In much longer unedited format.
It's fantastic. It is, frankly, more entertaining than one might think it would be.
I'm told.
Well, you have to be, I think there's a certain kind of person that is interested in that kind of thing. Like there's a certain kind of person that's interested in a podcast where you talk about a random episode of Star Trek.
I am that kind of person, Scott.
As am I. And that's what we're here to talk about. But let's talk about you for a second and your interest in Star Trek. Would you say that you are a Star Trek fan?
I would say that. I mean, there's probably degrees of Star Trek fans, but I feel like probably I would have to check a lot of boxes. I have been to Star Trek conventions.
Oh.
I have owned Star Trek collectible card games and trading cards. I have had Star Trek action figures. I have memorized unnecessary information about fictional spaceships. I would consider myself a pretty big Star Trek fan.
All of that information is necessary at some point. You never know when someone might ask you a question about the Enterprise.
I probably am not as ready as I was when I was a teenager, but I am ready.
Well, how did you get interested in Star Trek? What was your first entree?
I would say my first entree was Next Gen when it was in syndication when I was in junior high and high school. And I just kind of fell into it and just, you know, I would watch it. It was in syndication, so it was on every day. And I would watch it every day. And then you would watch, you know, when the new season was actually airing, I think it was on Sunday nights, I'd be able to watch a new episode. But being able to watch, you know, five or more episodes during the week when it aired in syndication was kind of a big part of, you know, getting home from school and doing homework and watching at least one episode of Star Trek was kind of a big part of my junior high and high school experience.
Now, I have noticed a trend in talking to people about Star Trek that generally, not always, but generally the first series that kind of hits them is their favorite. So does that theory hold with you? Would you say The Next Generation is your favorite series of Star Trek? Or
I would say that Deep Space Nine is probably my favorite series. You know, I've watched a lot of Next Gen. I've seen every episode of Next Gen multiple times at this point. I did not actually really get into Deep Space Nine when it was airing. I think basically I loved Next Generation when I was a teenager. And basically I wanted more of that. And Deep Space Nine is not more of that. And I was basically angry at it.
And that is, oddly enough, the same answer that I give.
We are of a similar era.
We are cut from the same Starfleet uniform.
Yes. Please don't cut your Starfleet uniforms. They are no longer up to code. If you do that, also, if you're ever in the vacuum of space, that could be severely limiting.
That is true. Only Captain Kirk can get away with it. Captain Picard, his uniform generally stays intact. And in fact, we're watching an episode, but in fact, we have watched this episode. We're going to discuss an episode of The Next Generation that features Captain Jean-Luc Picard in a completely intact uniform, although his first officer cannot be said the same of. The episode we're talking about is called First Contact, Season 4, Episode 15, for those people at home keeping track of such things. I don't know why you're keeping track of it, but go right ahead. And so this episode is... I've been identifying subgenres as we've been going along, And this one is, of course, the First Contact subgenre, I believe, since it's right in the title.
It's right in the title. Good catch, Scott.
See, you can't pull the wool over my eyes, no matter how hard you try. And so it opens up with Riker. It opens up with a scene from, you know, a hospital scene that you could have found in any...
A space hospital.
Exactly. Like a space hospital procedural could be the next Star Trek spinoff if they wanted to do it, like, you know, Star Trek Anatomy or something like that. And you're not sure what's going on, but there are aliens who are attending to somebody on a stretcher. The thing I noticed here is that I felt like sometimes Star Trek is... less successful in making the aliens seem alien. And I felt like at least the set dressing, while similar, obviously, to a normal hospital being an Earth hospital, if you will, I felt like the script that they used for this alien language and the displays, like the medical displays, were very alien-looking. So I say kudos to the set designers for that.
Yeah, they did a pretty good job with that. I mean, there's a lot of sets in this episode that are clearly not just from their stock, you know, Enterprise rooms ready to go. And they did pretty good. You know, some of them, they do look a little kind of cheap, and you can probably see a lot of stuff made out of cardboard or whatnot. But yeah, there is a lot of different sets.
There are a lot of sets in this episode. Yeah. And I think they did a good job, at least with the script.
Yeah, you actually see very little of the Enterprise in this episode.
Yes, we see 10 forward and the bridge. And I think that's
briefly,
about it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so Odo, you're wondering who is this person that is on the stretcher, although it is very quickly confirmed that, oh no, it's Will Riker. He's beat up. He looks like an alien. And he looks like these aliens that are attending to him, and they quickly figure out that he is in fact not one of them because they can't find his heart. And then they're like, oh wait, here it is. And one of the other aliens says, in his digestive tract. So they figure out something's wrong with him. They look at his hands, and they don't look like these aliens have, like, three fingers, I guess, with, like, suction cups at the end of them. And Will Riker has regular hands. I guess that's racist. He has human hands. And he has human feet. And this is one of the weirdest little, like, 2 seconds where they hold up his foot. And I'm pretty sure that is not actually Jonathan Frakes' foot. I think it's a fake foot he's holding. I don't know if that's true or not.
That would be in TV. It would be very unusual for it to be the actor's foot or even hands for close-ups that they have. You know, other people do that.
They have hands.
I kind of wondered, like, was he not wearing shoes? Or why did they think to take his shoes off?
Maybe he got knocked out of his shoes during the rioting.
Yeah.
And I don't know. But anyway.
I think Riker had made a lot of mistakes before this episode even started.
I was thinking that same thing. I have many questions.
I have some questions for Will Riker, too.
Yeah, what's going on, Will?
I'm going to be looking... I look forward to his after-action report.
That's right.
How he explains totally did everything right.
It all turned out well, right? Everything's cool, right, Picard? No need to put this on my permanent record. So they're pretty sure... something's going on. He doesn't have the right ribs. He's got strange feet. His face is surgically altered. He is not what it seems. And that's the teaser. The intro begins. Hooray. The Enterprise. And then Riker wakes up. I guess he wasn't unconscious, but they're like, well, who are you? And he says he's Rivas Jakar from a place far away from here. This is the episode that has told me that William Riker should never go undercover because he's a horrible liar.
His cover story breaks down in about 2 minutes.
That's right. He's like, I'm from the southern continent. And my doctor is a Crusher. Yeah, that's it. He couldn't even make up a name.
Also, these aliens have very distinctive hand features, and he's just wearing little mittens to protect himself. So, like, I don't know. He clearly spent a lot more time in beard school than in spy school because he is not ready for this mission. He suffered a pretty severe head injury, so maybe that was impeding his ability. But yeah, the first thing I'm going to do, let me name a doctor that does not exist on your planet. And in fact, is an actual doctor in Starfleet who, you know, I may have compromised in some way now. But yeah.
And whose name sounds nothing like the names that you have.
Yeah.
I can't, yeah. This harkens back to Errand of Mercy, where Spock and Kirk were hiding from the Klingons, and Spock gives his real name as his alias. Doesn't make any sense.
Nope.
Oh, Spock and Riker. And so he says, okay, I'm from the Southern Continent. I have this doctor that I would feel more comfortable with because she's familiar with my genetic abnormalities. But she's on sabbatical. You can't talk to her. But trust me.
Can't even find a listing for her.
That's right. She's cool, but you won't be able to get in contact with her.
He also has a phaser on him, which, I mean, kind of makes sense as a defensive weapon, but it's this thing that they've never seen before and seems very suspicious to them, so that, you know, further incriminating him as not making any sense in this world.
I have a quibble with the phasers later in this episode as well, but we'll get to that when that... So, yeah, they take his phaser, and they're like, well, we found this thing. We don't know what it is. And he says, oh, that's a toy. He had previously said he didn't have any family because he's not from this planet. The doctor, who is the main hospital administrator, says, I thought you didn't have any family. And Riker looked a little insulted, and he was like, it's for a neighbor's child, dude. And he was like, okay, I guess. And Riker said, oh, by the way, I had some jewelry. Have you found that? His communicator, and sadly, his communicator was lost in the riot. They don't explain what was happening with this riot, but Riker was there, he got hit on the head, and now he's in this hospital. They decide that they're going to keep him under observation and under secure, in a secure room that is not very secure at all, for 29 hours.
Not 29 hours. Yes. Not around the clock. 29 hours.
29 hours.
Just in case you thought these guys were humans. No.
That's right. No, we are aliens, and our days are 29 hours long.
But they're still measured in hours, conveniently.
Yeah, I had another issue with this, but I will talk about that later, too.
I like how the hospital administrator is basically just, like, annoyed at the situation. Like, why my hospital?
I've got
important paperwork to deal with.
I did love his reaction. He is a pure bureaucrat.
Yeah.
He's like... We're not going to tell security about this alien that we found until we know more, because I don't want to deal with the paperwork. And everyone be cool. Nobody tell anybody about this alien. And we'll just keep him under lock and key. But we'll certainly attend to him because, you know, he's injured. So we have to. We took an oath that is conveniently the same as human doctor oaths to make sure that everyone's okay. So that's what we'll do. But nobody talk about it. Which seems like a perfect plan. What could go wrong with it? And then we cut to the Chancellor's office, we find out, where he's talking to his chief scientist and his minister of security and two other people we don't care about because they are not named. And apparently the Malkorians, who are these aliens, are on the verge of developing warp-capable engines. And it seems that their society has been through a lot of upheaval recently with new economic ideas, new social ideas. And the Chancellor is seemingly a force for change on his planet, and for good, one imagines. And he's all for – well, he's reluctant. He wants the – he's a pragmatist, it seems, and he's interested in this warp drive technology, but he's not sure what they should do. His Minister of Security is pretty sure what they should do, and that is change nothing. They should not go into space. They should stop investigating things and just let the people – digest all the changes that have been happening. And apparently there are riots, so maybe the people are not very happy with all these changes anyway. And so the minister, Marasta, who is the scientist, says, well, we're on the verge of it. If you give me the go-ahead, within 10 months, we'll have a functional warp drive, and we'll go visit the neighboring star system. And the security guy is like, well, what will we do then? And she says, we'll find out what's there, and then go on to the next one. Which I thought was a good answer. A nice little scene. He was not pleased with his answer, though.
No, we're set up pretty early on there to not like him, right?
He
scowls a lot, and his alien makeup is a little bit more alien-y, and he has extremely unstylish space glasses that he wears
does.
On his face. His dialogue is a little, I would say, slightly, you know, jerkier and a little bit not as good, well written as everybody else.
Yes, so. He should just be twirling a mustache.
Yeah,
and little snidely whiplash.
Probably this guy is going to cause trouble later in the episode. This is not going to be his one scene.
This is not his one. I don't think we should do this, but I'm just going to go back to my office. See you later. Call me.
A lot to deal with. I also like that he is the Minister of Internal Security, but I'm unclear Is there a minister of external security? I don't know. Anyway.
And you would think with an alien coming, yeah, that's external, not internal.
I don't know.
So, he should not be dealing with this at all. It's some kind of internal coup happening. Maybe he killed the minister of external security. Yeah. Although they do make a big point that the Malkorians think that they are the supreme life forms and that the universe, mm-hmm, they are the center of the universe. So maybe they don't care about external things. There's nothing external, yeah, to them. There's only internal security.
And I have a lot of questions about the Malkorians in terms of how – there's a lot of things I like about this episode, but there's some stuff that I'm not sure how much sense it makes in terms of, like, you know, they're discovering warp technology, which would let them go far. But, like, you know, I mean – we don't have warp technology, but we have looked at other, you know, places in space around us, and but they don't seem to have that. And
no, well, they're not interested.
They also, you know, they conveniently, for a TV show, have a way of talking about their culture in a very third person, like I'm reading a book about their culture, guidebook kind of way. That's very convenient for me as a viewer, but I don't know how reasonable it is for people to talk about their own culture that way.
They're a very self-aware species.
Yeah.
They've been planning for this eventuality. My big problem with them, so they set up this that we're, you know, that we're the center of the universe, revolves around us, and then much later in the episode, the Chancellor refers to the planet as Malkor 3.
Well, you know.
And that makes no sense, because if you think you're the center of the universe, wouldn't it just be Malkor? Why would you be on the third Malkor?
Well, I mean, maybe it's – I'll defend that as, you know, they know that they're the third planet out, but they think of themselves as kind of the you know, the only sentient beings in their universe. And, you know, they're – even if they are not the, you know, spatially central part of the universe, they're the most important part, right? I don't know.
I still think they would just call their planet Malkor.
I also – why would you call – I don't think you would call your own planet Malkor 3, and, you know.
Yes, it seems, like, weird. Maybe it's the universal translator is translating that.
We don't call our planets, you know, Sol 3.
That well, that's what I was thinking, exactly. Yeah. We are Earth. It would be something else.
Yeah.
But that's a tiny quibble. But that's what this podcast is all about, really.
Indeed.
So back to the episode. They're on Malkor 3, even though they're just should be on Malkor. Morasta is very excited because the Chancellor is like, you know what? Go ahead with this warp drive. I'm interested. I like your moxie, kid. Go do it. And so she says, okay. She goes back to her office, which is very dimly lit for some reason, and has many banks of computers because she's a scientist and she needs many computers to do her work. And this episode, there's some strange editing choices. It seems like for like 4 minutes, she's just staring at a computer. That's an exaggeration. But for a very long time, we just watch her typing on a computer for maybe 30 seconds, but it seems like a long time. And then we see our end here, the familiar transporter sound effect, and who should beam into her office but Captain Jean-Luc Picard and Counselor Troi, to which Morasta is not that startled, honestly.
She rolls with it pretty well.
She does. I feel like if I were Morasta and these two weird people beamed on into my office, I would freak out a little bit.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, she does at first. She thinks it's a prank, so it's pretty good.
And, that's true.
You know, and presumably, you know, they talk about it later. They have identified her as being kind of like the most likely to go along with this, whereas, you know, if
they were right,
beamed into the Minister of Internal Security, they would have been shot.
That's true. He would have immediately killed them.
A slightly shorter episode.
That's right. And now Riker is the captain, if he can get back to the Enterprise. So they startle her in her office. They say, hey, we have identified you, as Tony said, as someone who's most likely to listen to us. We are not from your planet. You are about to get warp technology. Congratulations. We're here to assist you and advise you in this new exciting chapter in your civilization. Also, we've lost Riker. Could you help us? they don't ask at that point, but that's what they're getting at. And so she, as Tony said, says, well, this is a prank. I don't believe you. And Picard says, well, I can prove it to you if you like. So they beam her up to the Enterprise and take her to 10 forward. And this is another small, odd thing. They show 10 forward, and then Captain Picard comes in and looks around for some reason. Like, he's making sure that maybe, like, Wesley isn't there because he's going to screw it up if he is or something. He looks around, scoops it out, and then he lets Morasta come in. And she, of course, is enchanted by seeing her planet, and it's more beautiful than she thought it would be, because I guess this is the first time she's ever seen her planet from space.
And I didn't quite... That was, again, my question. It seemed like they were kind of using the invention of warp drive and space flight interchangeably, which doesn't really make sense, right? Because she talks about like dreaming of being an astronaut and they have a planetarium, but they don't, it was like, I'm very confused where science is at on your planet, but that's okay. You're aliens. I don't understand. We're not going to totally get into like, tell me about, you know, the history of industrialization on Malkor 3, but I was a little confused, like, you know, because presumably it takes humans a long time to get from spaceflight to warp drive, but you know, whatever.
Well, they do, and they do mention that they have done numerous space flights already.
Yes.
Or, well, they don't mention. They make oblique reference to it,
mm-hmm.
because when they figure out that the Riker is an alien, one of the doctors who we are kind of, who's like a little weasel, mm-hmm. says, it's because of all these space flights, and now the aliens are invading us. So I assume...
I had missed that line. That's a good point. Yeah.
I assume that they have seen their planet from outer space, but she hasn't herself been. I guess she's too old to be an astronaut. I don't know. She's too important to shoot off into space because she knows how to make a warp drive. So she goes. She's very excited. She tells a story about how she was at a planetarium and she always dreamed of being an astronaut, and now she's in space and she was really ready for it, and she's not freaking out at all. She's cool with the whole thing. She's very excited. And then this is the point at which she tells us all about how the Malkorians think of themselves as the supreme beings in the universe, and maybe Picard should step lightly when talking to the Chancellor, and probably... And this is at the point at which Picard says, oh, by the way, we've been monitoring your progress and your popular broadcasts and popular culture. And she says, oh, you know, I hate to think what you think of us based on that alone. And he says, well, we do have some more information about you. And this is the point at which he says, for several years, apparently, Federation operatives have been operating on the planet, creepily observing them, which seems kind of odd. I guess it doesn't seem odd, but it does seem, if I were an alien race and I found out aliens were observing us for several years, I wouldn't be happy about that. And that's why she says, maybe you shouldn't tell the Chancellor that. That's ixnay on the operative A's. And this is the point at which Picard says, well, we are missing one of our operatives. So if you could find him, that'd be great. She says, I'll see what I can do. And so they go down to the... we go back to the hospital where everybody, despite the administrator's administrator's orders, is talking about how the alien is in this room, and everybody's talking about it and has many theories about where it is. So Dr. Burrell, I guess, who is the administrator, interrogates Riker. Well, he doesn't really interrogate him. He questions him and says, there's no crusher. The address you gave us is of a restaurant or something, which seems like, once again, to speak to Tony's point about Riker not being the greatest spy, you maybe give an address of an actual house.
Yeah, I started to wonder why they had sent him. You know? And again, he had a head injury, but like, still, it seems like I feel like, you know, obviously he's not doing so well being questioned by a hospital administrator, but I feel like even if he was making small talk with somebody, like, you know, it would become pretty clear that he's, you know, he's not from here.
Yes. So. They would go to shake his hand and he would take his glove off to shake his hand. They'd be like, what? genetic abnormality. I have to go. So he, under very light questioning, but pretty much folds. Cut to the Chancellor's office, where the Chancellor is using some weird pneumatic stamp to sign a number of important documents, I just was fascinated by this stamp.
I noticed it too.
And he gets his secretary, says, hey, the Minister of Science is here with some guests. And he says, well, let the Vice Chancellor talk to her. And the secretary says, I really think you should talk to her. And in walks the Chancellor, the Minister of Science, and Jean-Luc Picard. And my thought here was Picard just kind of hanging out in the waiting room?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it's tricky, right? Because it's like, how do you appear places without, you know, making it clear that there's a bunch of aliens walking around the government offices? And that's mysterious. But you can't just teleport into everywhere. You can't beam down everywhere, or that, you know, that's gonna, you know, eventually you're going to really give somebody a heart attack. So yeah, it's... Well, maybe. There's a lot of logistics challenges to making first contact.
Do I
knock?
Should Picard have like an easily removable face thing when he's and then pull it off when he gets it like a Scooby-Doo cartoon? They decide not to do that, but I guess that would undermine his authority.
Maybe he should call first or like.
Well, I think what I would have done if I were Captain Picard. I often wonder what I would do if I were Captain Picard. I would give Maresta a communicator, and I would say, when you got to the Chancellor's office, you know, call me, send me a text or something, and then I will beam down.
I'm guessing it was cheaper to have Patrick Stewart just walk through the door.
That's probably true. It is. They are making
those are even those. You know, they got to use some doors that Patrick Stewart has to open instead of having to have two guys like you know pull the thing so that they. You know.
They did spend a lot of money on the sets, so they could. Yeah. There are only so many beaming special effects they could use.
Yep.
And so he says, "Oh my God, you're an alien." Picard's like, "We're here. We're here as friends, not conquerors." He doesn't say conquerors, but and he says, "I'll take you up to the ship so you can see some stuff." And the Chancellor's like, "Okay." So they go to the Enterprise where they meet Data on the bridge, and he's not all that impressed by Data, really. And he says, "Hey, Captain Picard, is there someplace in private we could talk?"
Yeah, I almost felt like they. I mean, there are a lot of scenes without our favorite characters in it, and you know, not even all of the kind of the standard Enterprise people appear in this episode. And there's almost these little things where they kind of like drop in. You know, Data is there to have basically like two lines just so he can be in the episode, because otherwise it would be. It's almost like they were not totally comfortable just like letting this episode be all about the Malkorians, since we see so much from their perspective.
Yes, this is a very Malkorian heavy
episode. It's extremely Malkorian heavy. The most Malkorian heavy episode I've ever seen.
I think it may be the most Malkorian heavy episode in Star Trek history and probably ever will be. And so, yeah, he's like, "Hey, let's go to your study. I need to, you know, talk to you." And Captain Picard's like, "Okay, let's go to my ready room." They go to his ready room. He gives them some wine that his brother made in some space wine glasses and says, you know, my people have a tradition of toasting things. And so they toast the friendship, and the Chancellor is not very trustworthy of Picard. And he says, "My people's history has shown that often conquerors come bearing gifts and signs of friendship." And Picard's like, no, we're not here to conquer you. We're just here to be advisors. In fact, our prime directive is a non-interference, although we are interfering pretty heavily at this point.
let's not get hung up on that. I'm super diplomatic.
That's right.
Let's be friends.
And also, I've lost an officer on your planet. Did I mention that? We still don't know where he is. And he's like, "Well, I don't know if I trust you guys. What if I ask you to leave?" And Picard says, "Well, then we'll leave." And he says, "Well, are you going to share your fabulous technology with us?" And Picard says, "No, not really." Which confused me a little bit, because why bother making first contact if you're not going to share any of your technology with the people you're making first contact with? It's kind of like, "Hey, you've entered the warp club. Here are the rules, and we're out of here."
Well, you know, I mean, there's a lot of nice scenes in this episode where we kind of get to see a little bit more specifics about how the Federation works and what their ideals are. And, you know, I mean, Picard has a lot of really great scenes and some great dialogue in this episode where he looks, you know, really great and he's really diplomatic and, you know, he's this kind of inspiring leader. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's some stuff where it's a little bit like, how much does that make sense? You know, and it seems to be, you know, the Federation has this agenda where they want to swoop in and make first contact with people and get them on their side because, you know, the alternative is, I don't know, don't want them siding with the Romulans.
Yeah, Scott. Those damn Romulans. And he tells a story about how their first contact with Klingons went poorly because they didn't really understand the Klingon culture. And so that's when they instituted this, which I think this is a good a scene and piece of dialogue where they talk about how they instituted the undercover agents kind of infiltrating the culture several years before they make first contact so that they can kind of figure out what's going on. And Picard says it was controversial, but he thinks that it outweighs the benefits outweigh the risks and the downsides, so they keep doing it. So I thought that was nice to address the fact that they have been doing that. And so the Chancellor still is not – he's thinking about it. And then there's a nice piece of dialogue where the Chancellor says, you know, "Every night I go home and I have dinner with my wife and my daughters, and they ask me how your day was, and I tell them if it's been good or bad." And Picard says, well, what are you going to say today? And he says, I woke up. And this is another thing. They're not really good at keeping these secrets, apparently, because he's going to tell his family, this morning I woke up the ruler of the known universe, and this afternoon I found out I was a voice in the chorus, which I thought was a nice line, but then I thought, you really shouldn't be telling your family that, because it's just going to bring up questions.
He gets some good dialogue. The Chancellor is a really great character in this. I feel like usually, when they introduce somebody just for an episode, they're not super fleshed out, but they do a good job with him. So
yes, he
carries a lot of this episode.
He is not a character, and I think the scientist is a good character. The security guy is just a character to be a threat. Yeah. But they are very well fleshed out. And then we go to the hospital where there's not a well fleshed character. Riker is attempting to break out. But in walks Lilith from Cheers and Frasier fame, B.B. Newworth. And basically she's a nurse. She says, oh, I've always wanted to meet an alien. And in fact, not only do I want to meet an alien, I want to have sex with an alien. So if you sleep with me, I'll let you escape. And Riker's like, well, our species make love in different ways. To which she replies, I'm excited to find out these different ways. So they have sex.
Presumably.
They don't show it, but they do show him leaving. So we assume that they did it.
And he tells her, I'll call you later, basically.
Yes. Which was great. She was like, when will I see you again? He says, well, next time I'm in your star system, I'll drop you a line.
Riker comes off as rather non-Rikery in terms of his interactions are with the ladies here. But, true. Again, massive head trauma.
He is a little befuddled, which also could explain his horrifically bad escape attempt.
Well, also, unfortunately, I mean, she was probably doing the best she could, but, like, her advice is basically, like, go right, and then, let me tell you, going right doesn't work out.
No.
He gets beat up.
He gets beat up.
So and there's some pretty classic, ridiculous Star Trek fight choreography where he, like, backhands a guy, and the guy, like, you know,
flies over the desk.
Flips upside down, and the thing where they put their two hands together and make, like, a one fist with both fists and, like, punch guys. I love that.
I love the fact that almost immediately, when he's discovered, from around the corner comes a guy with, like, a bat ready to hit him.
Space bat.
I'm like, where did the space bat come from? They beat Riker up.
This middle section it's kind of weird because it doesn't – I don't know if it's like they felt like they needed to like kind of do something to change the pace because the episode – I mean the rest of the episode is very talky. It's all just like scenes of like people in conference rooms or walking around the Enterprise like talking. And so this is like we have the one scene with humor with the nurse and then there's this like not even really a chase scene but basically lead up to a fight scene that kind of they insert here in kind of the middle of the episode. And – I don't know. It's kind of like maybe they just felt like the whole episode couldn't just be people sitting in conference rooms talking. So they had to put this in to break it up. But it's a little weird because it doesn't quite fit with everything else that's going on.
Well, I think that they probably included it, A, to have some action, as you said.
Yeah.
But B, to also show that, well, Marasta and the Chancellor are open-minded and really wants to see more of the world, or the galaxy, I should say. The regular people of Malcor III seem to perhaps not be ready to expand their horizons and think about aliens and flying around.
And, Riker gets beat up, so suddenly he's much more in peril than he was before, right?
He is beaten to a pulp. And even when he's down, comes up and kicks him in the...
Yeah, I'm assuming that most of those guys were not doctors. I felt like that was an unnecessary level of incapacitation.
It was a pretty savage beating that he got.
Yeah.
And so then the doctor, the administrator and his little doctor assistant, I don't know why I call her a little doctor assistant, she's just a doctor assistant, run up and he's like, hey, cut it out. And she kneels down next to Riker and without using any instruments knows that he's bleeding internally. And oh no, he's in peril. So they send him off to make sure he won't die. And then we go to a meeting with the Malcorians where they're talking about first contact and if they should, take up to trust whether these Federation people are going to do what they say or if this is just a feign in order to conquer them. The security guy obviously thinks that this is all a hoax and that the Federation just wants to conquer them. And the Chancellor's like, well, I went to their ship, and if they wanted to conquer us, we wouldn't be talking because we would be conquered. To which the security guy's like, that's what they want you to think. And they're like, well, I guess I can't argue that, but you're wrong. They find out that they have captured the spy, Riker, and Krolla, who is the security guy, is unhappy that there have been spies, and he's got Riker, and he wants to interrogate Riker to figure out what is going on. So he goes over to the hospital, and Riker is unconscious, and so he says to the administrator, you know, pump him full of drugs, I need to interrogate him. The administrator says, I cannot do that. That would be harmful to this patient. And even though he's not one of us, he's an intelligent living being. And Krolla's like, well, you're relieved of duty. Somebody else is now the administrator. And that guy will wake up Riker. And in fact, he does. Krolla takes this opportunity to interrogate Riker with a couple of questions. Riker answers them, kind of, because he's kind of groggy. And then the real reason why Krolla is there becomes apparent. He is going to become a martyr. By using the phaser that they figured out how to use, and Krolla shoots a piece of medical equipment. And this is my point about the phasers, is you would think that they would have some kind of safety or something, that some random alien couldn't just pick up your phaser and shoot something, but apparently not.
He does a lot of exposition before he's going to be a martyr. He's like, I want you to be really clear about what's going on here.
Here's my plan.
Like, yeah, don't. I don't want you to be confused by this.
This is why I'm doing this. I'm going to kill myself so that everyone thinks you did it and people will reject the idea that you are good, kind aliens and my way of life will be preserved even though I am dead. Sadly, Krolla is not an expert with the phaser, so he puts the phaser in Riker's hand. Riker tries to stop him, but he, you know, he's groggy and he can't. And Krolla shoots himself, but we find out, I mean, it's pretty obvious that it would just be he's stunned, but we don't know this yet. But he is. He's stunned. Spoiler alert.
Yeah. We find out in the next scene.
That's right.
Somehow, you know. I like also when they go up, they take Riker up to the Enterprise, and Crusher saves him, and she's able to explain, like, how they were holding the phaser, even though, like, yes, I feel like...
Really good.
Yeah, that's how you get to be head of Starfleet Medical, I guess. It's a little CSI training there. Yes. It's like, let me tell you about how this phaser was being held in this room that we're no longer in that I didn't really get to look at very long.
Yeah, so they somehow, I guess, the Chancellor tells Picard where Riker is. Beverly and Worf beam down to the hospital room right after Krolar has shot himself, and they find both Riker and Krolar. Worf looks at the phaser and doesn't say anything. One would think he would say, oh, it was set on stun. Nothing's that bad. But Crusher says to Picard, "We found Riker's about to die, and we found someone with phaser wounds, so we'll need to bring them both up to the Enterprise." They're both beamed up to the Enterprise. They're both fine, because Krolar was just stunned. And like Tony said, CSI Star Trek, Beverly is able to figure out exactly what happened after looking at it for like 30 seconds, which is impressive. And then we go to, once again, Picard's ready room, where we have another kind of talky scene where the Chancellor basically says, listen, if it were just me, I'd be totally for joining the Federation, even though you haven't offered that yet. But I'd be totally for taking you up on your help. But my people aren't ready for it, so I'm going to have to ask you to leave. And Picard says, well, what are you going to do? So many people know about what's happened. And he says, well, you know, the stories will morph over time. People will talk about it, but then they'll forget. And maybe by the time you come back, we'll be ready. And Marass is like, oh no, that's so sad. Hey, Picard, can I stay on the Enterprise?
I thought that was, you know, that was nice, but it's like, does this make any sense? I mean, like, they've invented warp drive. They do not need her.
And Picard's like, I don't know if you really know what you're saying. We may never come back to this planet ever again, even though it doesn't really take us that long to get here. But for some reason, we may never come back again. And she's like, I'm cool with that. I never really liked this planet anyway. And Picard's like, okay. We'll prepare you some quarters, and you can stay on this ship and forget everything you know, and we won't alert your family, and no one will ever wonder where you went, and we will never see you again in any other Star Trek episodes. And I can only assume, to this day, in the Star Trek universe, she is living on the Enterprise, doing whatever it is she does. And that's really the end of the episode.
Yep. It's kind of an interesting ending, because you kind of figure, I mean, you assume that everything's going to work out, right? And they figure out Krulla's deception, mm-hmm. and like you think everything's going to be okay, but, you know, Krulla kind of wins, right?
He does. His plan worked, even though it wasn't the way he thought it would happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting. And, you know, we see, I mean, we don't get a ton of time with all the different characters. We see a lot of Picard, and Picard's being great, right? He's like, he's clearly a great diplomat, and he, mm-hmm. you know, he's really inspiring, but like he loses, right? You know, his mission is not a success, and I guess that's part of the interesting story here, is that like first contact is such this big deal, and it's really hard, and you know, even if you know, you're really, really a great diplomat, you know, it's not always going to work out, especially if you send your, you know, first officer down to get captured and totally bend under like four questions.
I think that the real mistake
there's a lesson here about Riker, when yes. strategic deployment of Riker,
because they say, well, we've had operatives here, and I sent down Riker to coordinate. What's happening?
Yeah, next time have him do that remotely.
That's what I was thinking. Why don't you just beam up some of your operatives to the Enterprise and tell them, like, coordinate, and they all have communicators, so you could just talk to them, and then you wouldn't have the risk of adding another person, because Riker obviously doesn't really know the culture, so why send him down? It doesn't make any sense why they sent him to the planet.
I also, the Chancellor has that weird thing where he's like, you know, my people aren't ready for this, so we're going to shift our resources from warp drive research to education and cultural stuff. And I was like, can you just do that? I don't know what that looks.
He's like, Chancellor. Maybe, he could do whatever.
I've never run Melkor 3, so maybe it's a little bit like playing SimCity and you just twist little knobs up and down. He's like, yeah, let's put more money into culture, less money into warp drive.
That's how it works. Their society is very simple.
Yeah. Like, just that, you know. Even the, I was surprised at how much access, you know, the head of warp drive stuff has to the Chancellor, right? You know?
Well, it's true. She is in apparently all the meetings. Space exploration is super important to the Melkorians, even though none of them seem to be interested in it.
Even though they're afraid of it.
That's right. We hate it, but let's make sure we invest a lot into it. And yeah, that's the end of this episode. I think overall, what did you think of this episode overall?
I think this episode is you know, above average. I don't think it's like going to be on my top 10 or top 20 list of, you know, TNG episodes, but I would give it, you know, above average, kind of a B plus kind of rating, you know.
I concur. Even just for the fact that one of my favorite Star Trek, the customizable star card game cards, comes from this episode, Alien Groupie.
Oh, yes.
Which features B.B. Newirth's character in that moment where she's kind of looking up in ecstasy for some reason.
She's very impressed by Riker.
She is quite impressed by Riker. He does have a lovely beard.
He does.
Nobody. That's the other thing. No other Melkorians have beards.
That I might. Wonder, you know, we didn't. I don't know if we saw a statistically significant number of Melkorians, but
I wonder if they just don't have facial hair. That would be another tip.
Why did we send him?
Oh, it was a bad choice. We should have sent Geordi. Well, yeah, I think that overall a good, good-ish episode. Not awful, not bad, not super memorable, but it had good points. I think it gave us a good glimpse into the Federation and certainly the first contact process that they have.
You know, I think at that point you're in season 4 of Next Gen, and that's like, you know, it's pretty consistently good quality there. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a couple bad ones, but you know, I think this is really, a good stock Next Gen. It's not like those first couple seasons where it's best not to think too much about those.
Yeah, that's true.
That's like, well, yeah, on that incomparable episode where you guys were listing worst episodes, and it's like, I've seen all these episodes multiple times, but I blocked them out because those are not good episodes.
They are bad.
Like, even just like the first 3 or 4 of season 1 are like, they're all awful.
I am surprised that it lasted past those episodes, frankly.
Well, I'm glad it did.
I'm glad as well, because it has turned out to be a fantastic show. And with you know, even if this is a B episode, it's still a really good hour of, 45 minutes of TV. It's enjoyable.
Yeah, I give it a B+.
A B+, yes. And they have some fine acting. There's some great scenes. And frankly, not a lot really happens in this episode, like action-wise, other than that, you know, Riker getting beat up. So it's an unusual Star Trek episode. There's no...
This is a good one. It's a little more thinky. You know, there's not... We don't see very much special effects of spaceships flying around or anything like that, but it's, you know, it fleshes out the world of the Federation for us.
That's right. Well, Tony, thank you for joining me on Random Trek.
It's been fun.
Thank you. Next on Random Trek, The Next Generation Season 4, Starship Mine.